Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you?
I'm more likely than you to make it to the end of this episode.
Yes, I am a bit under the weather, so I'm probably going to have to go lie down after this episode. But, you know, let's see if we can make it through without me falling over on my desk. And joining us from Limpopo is Mr. Tiego Tsotse. Tiego, how are you?
I'm doing good things, and how are you, sir? Good afternoon, Herman, sir.
I've been better, but I'm still hungry for freedom, liberty, and disco, as they say. So before we start, just some more admin stuff. Firstly, a word from our sponsor, Bitvice. We all know that Bitcoin is the best performing asset of the past decade, and many people are accumulating Bitcoin as a strategy to hedge themselves against fiat currency debasement and government overreach. The guys at Bitvice have developed their latest product, SatStacker, to help you accumulate Bitcoin over the long term. SatStacker allows you to set up a recurring purchase order directly from your bank account, then accumulates Bitcoin for you at a frequency and amount that you choose, depositing the Bitcoin directly into your own self-custody wallet. There are many use cases for SatStacker, from simply automating a weekly purchase of some Bitcoin for your own personal stack to setting up a long-term investment fund for your kids. Accumulating Bitcoin in automated regular amounts has never been simpler, safer, and more convenient. To try out SatStacker today. There will be a link to that in the description of this show, both on the audio and the YouTube. Also, we had our event in Howick last night, and today we will be in Mshlanga at the Garden Court Mshlanga at 6 o'clock on the corner of Aurora and Centenary Boulevard in Mshlanga in meeting room floors in 1 and 2. So if you're in that area, come check us out. We're going to be speaking there to the people, or at least to the listeners. Anyway, so let's get into the news stories of today. The first one is that they finally caught a contractor who was carrying out sabotage at Eskom, or allegedly carrying out sabotage at Eskom, and he has reportedly admitted what many have long suspected, which is that he was asked specifically by the company which he works for, who have a repair and maintenance contract for Eskom, to carry out said sabotage. So Eskom says that they have assisted in the arrest of a maintenance worker for sabotaging one of its units at Camden Power Station. The perpetrator is allegedly is supposed to be employed by a maintenance company working at the station. And according to Eskom, he intentionally removed the bearing oil drain plug from the bearing, causing the oil burners to tip repeatedly. Eskom says this malicious act caused all the oil to drain out from the bearing, thus damaging the bearing, which in turn prevented the mills from operating optimally. Camden Unit 4 subsequently tripped after losing the mills. This happened on the 10th of November. Evidence was obtained, and according to Eskom, the perpetrator confessed, saying he intentionally removed the plug to cause the trip to ensure that his employer would be awarded additional maintenance and repair jobs at the station. Eskom went on to say, it is disheartening to find that some of our contractors are unscrupulous, have malicious intent, and are willing to plunge the country into further load shedding at a time when the electricity grid is highly constrained. We've always suspected some of our maintenance contractors and employees are behind these acts of sabotage. We will work with the law enforcement agencies to bring these insiders to book and ensure justice is meted out. The Special Investigative Unit has also at the same time said that there is a very big problem with substandard coal being delivered to Eskom stations, which is very damaging to them when you have like coal that's more rock than coal. The current scheme has managed to mostly mix the substandard coal in with the good stuff. So it's very difficult to tell who delivered the bad stuff. And that's causing a lot of Eskom's problems too. And this follows on Eskom firing and bringing to the attention of law enforcement two employees who they say deviated at Madupi Power Station from normal maintenance procedures. And as a result, cause a hydrogen explosion, which Eskom says will take 2 years to fix, which is pretty devastating. Crazy stuff. Herman, what do you make of this? I'm very glad they got someone who confessed and clears up this conspiracy theory, and turns out that it's not so conspiracy theory-ish in the pejorative sense of the word.
No, that's absolutely true. The question is, when you talk about sabotaging Eskom, that could happen in many, many forms. One of these forms is direct sabotage, as we see here. Another way is to continuous political interference, rigging procurement processes, preferential procurement tenders, all of these things, because ultimately, if we need to sort of ask what sabotage is, and sabotage in a sort of a fair rational interpretation is probably inflicting damage for the promotion of an ulterior cause or motive. And if that doesn't describe something like BEE or rigged public procurement as essentially formalized, legalized sabotage, comparable to this gentleman here, then I don't know what is. But let's also ask, how did we reach a point where it is in the interest of some service delivery providers that people on the inside of an entity actually have the power, the opportunity to inflict this sort of damage? And it all boils down to the insidious, it's what the Lannister brother and sister did. Incestuous. That's the word. It really portrays the incestuousness of this entire system. The people who work there, the people who employ who award the contracts, the people who deliver the contracts, the people who determine the criteria for the contracts, the people who oversee the implementation of the contracts, the people on the board, all of this is an incestuous muddle of conflicted interests made possible by the criminal organization that is the African National Congress. They have set up the system. These aren't aberrations. These aren't bugs. They are features. This sort of opportunism, this sort of rigging the system even further, was allowed into the environment because in the first place, they got rid of the idea that the best service provider should provide the service. Once you get rid of that idea, you open it to any form of manipulation you possibly can. And we look at our political elite, who Mletse Mbeki, even in 2009, described as these architects of poverty. And we look at the criminal infrastructure and interests that have grown into an established cancerous patronage network around the ruling party. So when we ask a question, how did someone not only get into this position where they have a conflict of interest, where they can actually execute the sabotage, but how was this person appointed in the first place? I cannot for one moment believe that this person was the best appointment for the job because we departed from the idea of meritorious appointment. And I think when we look at sabotage, instances like this, sabotage happens at every level, whether it's a screw you loose or whether it's the principle of merit-based appointment you loose. At the end of the day, the whole system shakes loose. And that is why Joburg at last, even if it is just to indicate the intention, because a lot of economic activity, market activity, political activity is based on the concept of sentiment. If a municipality can just indicate that there is some movement, that there is some improvement, that there is a new development in the pipeline, then you can actually restore some form of trust in the broader system.
So what Herman is referring to is Joburg has published a request for proposal, which is the beginning of a process to step away from Eskom. It's very early stages basically start acquiring much more of Joburg's electricity from independent power producers and not just from Eskom, according to city officials. By going out to market now, City Power seeks to secure extra capacity from diversified energy sources, including solar, gas, battery storage, waste to energy, as well as a dispatchable option of gas to power. So, Tiago, I've made a terrible mistake. I let Herman go first so that he could steal all of the good lines. But your thoughts on this whole mess and you know, what it takes to cause such rot in an institution that you have the same people who are supposed to fix things breaking things?
Well, I think we are dealing here with people around. I've never understood how, and I'll refer to the African National Congress because really they are the government of the day and the ones in charge of these things a lot of times. I've never really understood how they think, you know. I am very much convinced that, well, I'm becoming convinced the more and more I try to think of how they think, that they come up with policies. And instead of coming up with ways of getting those policies forward, some of the policies, of course, are nonsensical. But say they come up with a good policy, how do we get this policy? How do we effect? How do we make it effective? How do we move it forward? Those do not become the immediate questions to their heads. They come up with a policy, allocate a budget in line with the policy, then start thinking, how do we eat? That becomes really the question on their minds. So this is not a unique story at all. Precisely what happens, this kind of sabotage happens everywhere. But I must say that I agree with everything that Herman has already mentioned. But particularly this story that we are discussing here, this kind of sabotage is not at all unique. At municipal levels, throughout the country, you find councillors together with some provincial politicians coming together, organizing protests just so things can be ruined and tenders can come out. You find politicians hiring people, tenderpreneurs hiring people to ruin certain things because they have people within departments, within municipalities, within state-owned entities that they work with. They know that if this thing breaks, then certainly this tender is coming to us. So whenever they are broke, the solution becomes, where do we break and ensure that we do get an income, you know? So I've never understood this kind of thinking, but I think it's really rooted in greed. It's rooted in thinking for just oneself and your immediate family and not all of South Africans and what we can achieve if we were to do things correctly, you know?
Herman, any final thoughts before we move on?
I think it's really just shocking that we look at the ANC and we might wonder how they think, but we've said this on the show before. The ANC is split in two factions mainly: those who are ideologically committed to a centralized state. Perhaps people like Cyril Ramaphosa in August 2019 said in Parliament that the government, should be at the heart of all economic activity. So you've got the ideologues who genuinely believe that centralized control is the way to go. But we have to be honest and say that even those hard-nosed ideologues, your Ebrahim Patels, your Pravin Gordhans, they are losing the fight against hyenas, people who want the state to be massive and want the state to seize assets, not because they believe in a socialist utopia, but because they believe in self-enrichment. And I come back time and time again to Smuts Mngonyama, who said, "I did not participate in the struggle to be poor." And at the end of the day, until that feedback loop that Tioho just precisely described is actually broken, we will continue going down this line. And that loop can be broken either by the citizenry in voting for governments that are different, either in rogue politicians going mad and implementing something like proper tender procurement procedures, which they now have the freedom to do thanks to Minister Gordhan Mngwana, or in the implication or implementation of proper security measures, whether those are, cybersecurity or just physical security. So this loop of destruction will continue until one of these three entities step up. And I suspect the easiest step-up route is just for the citizenry about 530 days from today.
Indeed, indeed. All right, let's go on to our next topic. And this is about, we've got a lot of ministers who, shall we say, I don't think have great performance records in government. But there's a couple who add to that incompetence, a level of eccentricity and weirdness. Fikile Mbalula is my personal favorite because he's always a lot of fun to follow the news because he says lots of crazy things. And by the way, we're not going to cover this story, but they found that at PRASA, of the suspected 3,000 ghost workers, there was an independent audit company brought in to work out who actually works at PRASA, and 1,400 employees could not be physically verified as actually working there. Yeah, so Vikile Mpalula's in a bit of trouble at the moment. But another one of our eccentric, not very well-performing ministers is Lindiwe Sisulu, who at the moment has very high aspirations. So she's, of course, descendant of ANC royalty, so to speak, with her father being Walter Sisulu. And she has been summoned by the Portfolio Committee for Tourism to attend this week's portfolio meeting to respond to a number of outstanding issues, because apparently Lindiwe Sisulu, despite supposedly as a minister having to account to Parliament, has not attended a portfolio meeting for the past 4 weeks, and in no case was an apology or an excuse given. Now, these portfolio meetings are controlled by the ANC, so it's not exactly like she was going to face the most hostile possible room of people she could, and yet she still decided that she wasn't going to go. She's responded to these allegations by saying, "I wish to place on record that I respect the Portfolio Committee and its role as an extension of Parliament to exercise oversight. I've always supported the mandate and work of the committee and will continue to do so." So this has been a recent editorial. I can't remember who it was in. I think it was possibly Business Day. But anyway, that Lindiwe Sisulu has been spending all of her time, rather than going to portfolio committees, hitting the campaign trail for the ANC's internal elections. In the words of the editorial, whining and dining journalists and anyone keen to flatter her ego by discussing her, quote, army credentials. She was briefly in the Minister of Defense, or not that briefly, but she was Minister of Defense for a while. I don't think she actually has any army credentials. But anyway, she's also been attacking Cyril Ramaphosa quite openly, saying that he's corrupt and that he's buying votes and that the party is in complete thrall to financial interests. She also penned a letter, I believe it was at the beginning of this year, describing judges who ruled essentially against the ANC or against the National Democratic Revolution as house N-words. And you can fill in the racial expletive there for yourself. There's a lot to say on this, but Tiego, let me give you the opportunity first. What do you make of Minister Sisulu's performance in office?
Well, I think, back a few months ago when she made her remarks around the Constitution, when she was making some remarks around President Ramaphosa, for some of us, she appeared like someone who wanted to be fired. You know, like I said, how the ANC and the ANC comrades think, it's strange. She appeared like someone who wanted to be fired from her position as a minister, so she could use that to then go around mobilizing ANC members at branches to say that this is not a reliable president, he has even gotten rid of me, blah, 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 please vote for me. So she has not gotten fired, and I guess now she has decided that she's gonna run her campaign regardless while she's still a minister, and she's now neglecting her duty as a minister. But stay rest assured, wherever she is, even now as we speak, she's probably trying to spread the message towards their conference in December that people should elect her, but I don't think she has enough support in the organization.
Raman, you had some thoughts on this and the role of Parliament.
Yeah, no, I just think I'll get to those in a moment. Something that we should note is this is someone who's been in cabinet for 21 years. She was the Minister of Intelligence 2001 to 2004. Then Minister of Housing, 2004 to 2009. Then Minister of Defense, 2009 to 2012. Then Minister of Public Service Administration, 2012 to 14. Then Minister of Human Settlements, 14 to 18. Then Minister of International Cooperation, Relations and Cooperation, 2018 to 2019. Then Minister of Human Settlements, Water and Sanitation, 2019 to 2021. And now Minister of Tourism. It is difficult to think of a minister with a worse or more impotent track record for 20 years. What has she accomplished? 20 years as a minister. If we consider her career and we sort of look at where she's been active in the intelligence community, well, that's interesting, especially regarding the presence of terrorist activity in South Africa, regarding the increasing criminalization of South African passports and South Africa as a base for illegal operations, whether it's the country itself or our territorial waters. So on in terms of intelligence, utter failure. If we look to defense, I mean, if South Africa is ever invaded by a foreign country, Fikile Mbalula will have done more to slow the invasion of the country than the South African Defense Force, because the roads would be in such a state that an advancing army...
And the rail system.
An advancing army will have to rebuild South Africa's infrastructure to reach our cities. So in terms of defense, Lindiwe Sisulu has no accomplishments, none. Okay, let me be fair. She has one accomplishment, and that was that she was awarded the Order of the Red Star by the Soviet Union in 1979. So let's tick that in the win column. Then we look at public service and administration. These are the people responsible for our borders, our infrastructure, our government buildings. Those speak for themselves. Then human settlements, housing in this country. I don't know if people have actually bothered to look at what's become of government housing in the last 10 years. It is embarrassing. In the late 90s, South Africa was actively building hundreds of thousands of RDP houses every year. In 2018, I think that fell below 60,000, and it hasn't picked up since. So,
and it's not just that they're not building a lot of them. A lot of the ones that are built are of the most appalling quality.
Yes.
And in the mid-2010s, I actually went on a tour of some of those RDP houses, and you have like the walls crumbling off because they're made of such cheap materials and things. It's a disaster all around.
And the Minister Sisulu, well done. She's been involved with that. And now she's Minister of Tourism. And it seems the tourism she's most interested is herself visiting convicted felons in Northern Cape prisons, because that's where she spent a large part of October fighting to see convicted felon John Block, former chairperson of the ANC, in the Northern Cape. This is someone whose brother, Max Sisulu, actually was one of South Africa's most impressive parliamentarians. He was an impressive speaker. He was the last speaker to actually understand parliamentary procedures and the role and function of parliament. But it is ironic that this Sisulu, this particular clump of incompetence in high heels, comes along, undermines her own party, illustrates how weak the president is that he cannot even fire a minister who directly challenges his authority. We owe her a great favor further, because she also illustrates that the ANC cares nothing for delivery at a cabinet level, because she's been in cabinet for 21 years. She was appointed to cabinet when I was 10, and she's still there without any discernible success. And now she distinguishes herself by being this entitled rogue element. And she illustrates her final favor she does to us is she illustrates how Parliament has become a toothless sheep as a watchdog. If a minister accountable to Parliament, a member of Parliament, couldn't be asked to account to Parliament, it is an indictment of what has happened to parliamentary democracy. So we owe Lindiwe Sisulu a massive debt of gratitude. She proves that the ANC has no interest in delivery for cabinet ministers, that your lineage and where you come from means absolutely nothing because her brother isn't a washout like she is, and the fact that the ANC rubs cozy shoulders with every type of criminal you could possibly imagine, and lastly, that Parliament is essentially a dead sheep as a watchdog. So, Minister Sisulu, you do us a favor.
Look, all I'm really hoping for is that her decision to cross swords with Ramaphosa here in a particularly public way is going to see her demoted in cabinet, if not, you know, heaven forbid, actually be fired from cabinet after the ANC selective conference. You'd think that because she's actively opposed to Ramaphosa, he might, you know, do what politicians do everywhere in the world and fire their political opponents from cabinet. But I don't know. Even that seems like a distant hope. Tioko, do you think that after the December conference, if Ramaphosa is victorious, he will maybe finally get rid of her?
Yeah, I think he'll probably get rid of her, because in the ANC, it's understood that if you get rid of your opponent just before an internal election, you then give them time and you also give them a weapon to use against you and say that this person got rid of me. They don't respect democracy and stuff of that nature. And of course, accusations of this nature that Ramaphosa is a dictator of some sort and whatnot within the party. If you don't agree with him, he gets rid of you and stuff of that nature. If she was to make such an argument at this point, it would work at a lot of branches, because there's your ace Makashule's and many other people, Supramahuma Pelos, who are going around saying exactly that and have been in a way mobilizing people on the ground. So she would have a ground to fall on. And I guess that's why Ramaphosa did not get rid of her now. He's probably aware that she would have that chance of coming in with that ticket. So he'll probably get rid of him afterwards. Yeah.
Well, I hope you're right, because then finally I'd have something to celebrate Ramaphosa for anyway. Okay, let's move on to our last story for today. And this is just about the private sector. It's not what we always necessarily cover on the show, but it's just kind of interesting to think about. So the SPAR Group says that it's doing pretty well. This is, of course, the retail company, the grocery store chain. And they're not just doing well in South Africa, but in a lot of the markets they operate in, Ireland, Switzerland, and Poland, where apparently SPAR can also be found. They've just launched their on-demand delivery shopping app, which allows you to order SPAR groceries delivered to your door. So I think all the other big retail chains were ahead of them in that. I know Woolworths, Pick and Pay, and Checkers were all pretty fast out the door in that during the pandemic. SPAR seems to have only really caught up quite recently, but they claim that there's been a very positive reception to it. The SPAR Group's turnover was up 6%, with operating profits up marginally 1.1%. To their profits are at 3.43 billion rand for the last financial year. So I think it's just quite interesting because, Herman, you were saying that, you know, this really shows that sort of amidst all the difficulties, things like inflation, which is usually not great for retail shops, you can still claw your way through the hazy times. What do you make of this story?
I'll be very, very short on this. I think we should contrast this story with the first story. We should contrast SPAR, Eskom, Woolworths, Checkers with Eskom and see in the one where there's market competition, where you don't have massive government involvement, where you have customers to satisfy, there's a competition for better service delivery.
Right. Retailers, that grocery retail stuff is some of the most competitive parts of the market.
Exactly. And here we see, I today can order, as I sit now with my phone here, I can order from Woolworths, Checkers, SPAR, well, not SPAR yet, Woolworths, Checkers, Pick and Pay. If I want groceries delivered, and SPAR is now coming to this game. Imagine that sort of consumer-focused delivery for something like power or water. And if you say it can't be done, well, you're going to have some explaining to do.
Jeho, any thoughts to add?
Well, yeah, as we were discussing this, I was thinking about Uber and Taxify in South Africa. Just thinking around really the whole thing of businesses operating online and everything of that nature. That we have Uber and Taxify and other service providers that really provide transport services in South Africa. The drivers being abused. And of course, Herman would be aware, it's something that we've discussed previously before. Taxi drivers, meter taxi drivers, are taking these guys for simply operating and trying to make an income for themselves and their families. And I think the government in such an instance would have to come in and protect Uber drivers and Taxify drivers like that. But I think in terms of SPAR and the progress it has made, kudos to them. Great progress. It's great for South Africa. Hopefully more employment will come from that. South African government should please observe this and really look at how progress comes about, how the private sector Excelsior is then able to create jobs, create more jobs when they open more branches and stuff of that nature. They should encourage more business than more government, simply because private sector gets it right better than they do, as they have illustrated now.
Very, very briefly, right. 4,000 jobs were created by Checkers in 2021 with their 60-60 program. 4,000 value-add jobs. That's how you go about it. Value-add employment is the way forward.
No, exactly. And this is the recurring sort of story about South Africa. As we, you know, we go through the news about politics and government, and every time we just see sort of disaster after disaster, and it all looks so hopeless, and yet the country manages to sort of keep going. And it's because there are a lot of South Africans out there, a lot of South African companies, small business owners, big businesses, and everything in between that really make the best of difficult situations and are sometimes even able to thrive. And I think it shows that if we just take off the shackles of misgovernance, of bad policy, of all these other things, that South Africa really has the potential to explode in growth in a way that would really uplift a lot of South Africans. But anyway, that's all the time we have for the show this week. Apologies for being, as former President Donald Trump would say, low energy. But we will be back next week on the show. So I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Cheers, everyone. We'll be right back.